Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, January 18th, 2019. A Sudanese politician who spoke to this program a few days ago while taking part in a protest is arrested.
I'm pretty worried about him. He, you know, because of his love for the people there, he just continues the struggle, and he's usually always in front.
And the U.S. urges Sudan to respect freedom of assembly as the protests continue across the country.
We urge the government to fully respect the rights to freedom of association and peaceful assembly, to release all journalists, political opposition leaders, activists, and any other protesters arbitrarily detained.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese politician and activist Ridwan Dawood has been arrested this week by Sudanese authorities. On January 9th, he talked to us while protesting in the streets of Khartoum, along with thousands of others, and described how police were entering private homes with guns drawn to chase down some of those protesters. Today, Ridwan's wife, Nancy Dawood, in the western U.S. city of Eugene, Oregon, describes how she found out about her husband's arrest on Wednesday.
He's a candidate for first vice president of Sudan, but of course now Sudan of the Future campaign has withdrawn from the elections in 2020, and they stand with other opposition parties to end Bashir's brutal regime and enter into a transitional government until there can be a free and democratic election.
So tell me the circumstances surrounding his arrest. What do you know about it?
Well, he's very well known by security. He was in Al-Souq El-Arbi, the Arabic market, when he disappeared on Wednesday before the large protests planned for Thursday.
And when you say he disappeared, did you hear it from other protesters that may be contacts or friends of yours? What were the circumstances?
Mm-hmm. Right. A lot of his friends were contacting me saying they couldn't reach Ridwan. There was a meeting he was supposed to attend, and he didn't show up. By early Thursday, my time on the West Coast, I finally heard from one of the men that had been arrested with Ridwan. He's a Sudanese lawyer. He was released because there wasn't any prior arrests on him, and they put him under surveillance. He said that three of them were arrested in the market and taken to the Security Information Service Center and interrogated for several hours.
And you're talking about Khartoum right now, right?
In Khartoum. He said Ridwan was beaten in the face and chest, and the lawyer had been badly beaten in his head and his cheek. And he said that Ridwan and El Badouay, the other gentlemen, were being transferred to Shendi Station Detention Center, I believe. That's the NISS headquarters in Khartoum North next to Shendi Station.
Okay, and that's the last you heard of where he might be and what his condition might be.
Right. We haven't heard anything yet. The U.S. Embassy in Khartoum said that they are trying to call the NISS to confirm that Ridwan is there. They will also go to the NISS headquarters on Saturday morning to request access to all American citizens detained. And that's what we know so far.
I'm taking from, you know, the sound of your voice that you're pretty worried about him.
I am. Yeah, I'm pretty worried about him. He, you know, because of his love for the people there, he just continues the struggle, and he's usually always in front. He's organized a lot of the peaceful protests there. People of Sudan, they're just demanding freedom, justice and democracy, and most importantly, they're calling for an end to this 30-year tyranny.
Do you think that they would do anything to harm him while he's in custody?
I'm hoping and praying that they won't, because he is such a well-known public figure. I'm hoping that he will be treated better. I'm also hoping that the pressure from the United States will help so that he will receive better treatment.
Are you and your husband both U.S. citizens?
We are, and we also have our little daughter who's six. Her name is Sudan, Niala Ridwan Dawood.
When's the last time you spoke to him? And were you able to talk to him at all since he's been arrested?
No, I haven't heard from him. I did speak to him earlier, just a few hours actually before his arrest. And he did share with me, some contacts that he had that I could reach out to if anything did happen. So although he was being very cautious and was, of course, hoping not to be arrested, it was something that we knew could happen.
Has Ridwan, as far as you know, and other protesters like him, been charged with a crime?
No, not at all. Even the last time he was arrested one day, I believe it was the Sunday before Christmas, and even the year before that when he spent over 40 days in prison, there were no charges at all brought against him, no trial. When he left, there were no conditions. So all of these people are all being held without any charges.
What are you hoping for at this point?
Well, obviously, I'm hoping that he will be safe and unharmed, and that he'll be released with all of the other detainees. Really calling on the U.S. to pivot their policy on Sudan to support freedom, justice, and democracy there. And really, there can be no betting with this bloody regime. It needs to end.
That is Nancy Dawood, the wife of Sudanese-American politician and activist Ridwan Dawood of the party Sudan of the Future campaign. He was arrested in Khartoum on Wednesday, according to our sources, after taking part in demonstrations in which protesters have called for Sudan President Omar al-Bashir to step down. Nancy Dawood was speaking to me this past hour from the western U.S. city of Eugene, Oregon. The UN Security Council met in New York yesterday to discuss international sanctions imposed in Sudan, as well as ongoing armed conflicts in that country, including Darfur. The meeting was scheduled to take place before the protests erupted in December, but several envoys took time to address the protests, even though that was not the stated intention of the meeting. Ayan Dangbior has details from Washington.
The United States is urging the Sudanese government to respect freedom of association and assembly. As protests in the country enter the one-month mark this weekend, U.S. Representative Rodney Hunter made these remarks at the U.N. Security Council meeting yesterday.
We urge the government to fully respect the rights to freedom of association and peaceful assembly, to release all journalists, political opposition leaders, activists, and any other protesters arbitrarily detained.
The UK Deputy Ambassador Jonathan Allen echoed that sentiment.
We are appalled at reports that security forces have used tear gas and violence within hospitals against those being treated, and against doctors providing medical assistance. We repeat our calls for restraint in policing the protests, for the release of detainees, and for accountability for those killed. The government of Sudan's response to these protests will shape the United Kingdom's approach to engagement in the coming months and years.
But Ambassador Omer Dahab Fadal Mohammed, the representative from Sudan, was defiant, saying his government is committed to giving citizens space to peacefully express their views. Speaking through a translator, Dahab says the government is also committed to protecting citizens against sabotage and arson and other forms of violence perpetrated by some demonstrators.
The government of Sudan is fully committed to giving citizens a space to peacefully, I repeat, peacefully express their views on the political and economic situation of the country. At the same time, the government of Sudan is committed towards its constitutional duties as is guaranteed it by international law, in that it's right to protect lives and public property against sabotage and arson and all other forms of violence perpetrated by some demonstrators.
The U.S. representative also demanded that an investigation be carried out into the deaths of protesters and for the use of excessive force. Ayan Dangbior, VOA News, Washington.
In the second part of our interview with Azaz Alshami, the Sudanese-American human rights advocate, she describes the ultimate goal of the Sudanese protesters besides ousting President Omar al-Bashir from power.
When it comes to basic commodity, everything is skyrocketing, and that's because the weakening of the current currency. We don't have hard currency, and also we don't produce anything. You know what I mean? There's nothing in Sudan. There's nothing that's produced. Everything is corruption, and anything that happens with the currency, everything else follows. You know what I mean? So, and the other problem that was with people that before, the middle class or whatever left of it used to have the money to buy whatever is increasing. Now you don't have access to your money. You know what I mean? This is like in the recent, like past 6 months or so, people cannot even those who have money and have the purchasing power to buy things at increasing rate, they cannot have access to their money. So that's like added salt to the wounds. You know what I mean? So first it was a scarcity and then very expensive commodity and then not having access to your money.
The protests began in response to the economic crisis, specifically skyrocketing prices over bread and fuel. And then we heard reports that people were finding no bread on store shelves at all. Is that still the case after more than a month of protests?
Yes, that's still the case. That's still the case because obviously what they do, there's a mistrust in the market. The market is they say they want to liberate the market, but there's no trust or regulation to regulate that market. So what happens, the minute you have any fluctuation in currency, things immediately become expensive, even if they were bought at a cheaper level, right? And then what happens, all these big like people who are having access to manipulating the market, they just buy everything and make it a black market. Mm. But there's only so much you can buy if there's no hard currency and you have no liquidity in banks. So what do you end up with a scarcity? And some of them have like shelf lifetime that they're not going to be usable anymore. They're not even edible.
What is the ultimate goal besides ousting President al-Bashir? What do the people want?
Well, to them at this point, people are kind of traumatized and there's a lot of tense emotions. So all they see now through the rage and the sense of like being treated unjustly and all that and killed and shot at, they just want the regime to go away. You know what I mean? And by that, they mean al-Bashir. The average person does not necessarily know the deep state or gets into the weeds of it. But all they know that he is the driver for this corruption, this collapse of the country and everything else. So they want him to be gone and done with. A lot of people, I personally think there need to be more strategic formulation of what their asks are. But a lot of Sudanese think that there's a lot of emerging leaders that are coming from this mobilization and from this, like
some of the activists.
Yes, like activists can be like an activation of older political bodies. There was like this declaration of salvation of the country that was many signatories to it that included a lot of like grassroots movements. So in addition to traditional political movement that it's calling for the regime to relinquish power to an interim government that will be in place for 4 years until they do an election and all that.
A transitional government,
yeah,
of sorts?
Yeah.
What do you say to Bashir and his supporters who say we will not be pushed out of power and it has to be handled by fair democratic elections?
Well, this is very interesting because they made these words, all these like democratic processes became so void in Sudan. You know what I mean?
Especially how he came into power.
Exactly. So, A, you did not come to power through election. Yes, we love elections and we think this is the best way to transition power and have a better process. But you didn't come this way. Second, you're running for the third time and you're manipulating the constitution to allow you so. So with this level of manipulation, of legal frameworks and all that, who trusts you? And they had already an experience with that. Even when the election were held first time in 2010, it was not fair play. You know what I mean? It was rigged, but it's still the international community recognized it because they wanted to get the CPA signed and all that. So there's no trust on the government political will to really be committed for a democratic process, including the election. They did the national dialogue, so a lot of people don't trust what the government say because they use these big words and flashy words. But in the process of it, people realize that it's just false and a facade mechanism. It's not true.
That is Sudanese American human rights advocate Azaz Alshami speaking with me in our VOA studios here in Washington, D.C. yesterday. On Monday, Alshami outlines various scenarios of the possible outcomes to Sudan's protests.
Thank you.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The British ambassador to South Sudan is not pleased with the pace of implementing the revised peace deal. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you forgive and forget?
It depends. Like, it depends on the situation or the fault that you did for me. Sometimes I forgive and forget. Other times I can't forget. I forgive, but I can't forget.
Yes, of course I forgive and I forget. First of all, if I forgive, my mind becomes clear to each and everything.
Of course I can forgive and forget. Reason being, there are very many people who harm us, but we shouldn't always keep it at heart.
Forgiving helps because sometimes we overlook some other things, because if, for instance, I do not forgive and forget, then what if the same applies to me?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The British ambassador to South Sudan says the international community is not satisfied with the level of political will that's been demonstrated by both South Sudan's government or the opposition in implementing the revitalized peace agreement signed some 4 months ago. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
In an exclusive interview with South Sudan in Focus, British Ambassador Alison Blackburn says the environment across South Sudan contains challenges that do not allow effective implementation of the deal. She is calling on all the parties to allow the stakeholders to have more freedoms so they can help implement the agreement.
What we have seen are some worrying developments over the last few months where civil society actors and organisations have come under pressure. There has been pressure on the media. These are not things which are in keeping with either the spirit or the letter of the peace agreement.
Blackburn says Britain supports the peace process and wants South Sudan's former warring parties to implement the agreement effectively so lasting peace can be restored in South Sudan. While praising the former warring parties for holding several meetings in Juba and outside the country to talk about implementing the deal, the ambassador says all actors should be actively involved in implementing the agreement.
The agreement that we would like to see progress on are things like release of all political detainees, the freedom of the media, allowing civil society to do its really important job, not just on humanitarian and development work, but also in terms of representation of people's views, helping people to understand the peace agreement on reconciliation and so on.
The Troika, which is the United Kingdom, the United States, and Norway, released a statement last year following the signing of the revitalized peace agreement, in which it expressed reservations on the deal, saying it was not inclusive. Blackburn says the UK is concerned that the former warring parties have not implemented the deal according to the agreed time frame, which includes unifying the various forces into a national army.
Assessment, everything we hear suggests that there is still a long way to go on agreement on the fundamental aspects of how to form a single integrated national army. There's agreement that that should be the end result, but there are still big differences between the various parties.
Blackburn called on all parties to stop fighting and concentrate on the implementing the peace agreement.
Although there's been a significant reduction, there are still pockets of fighting. People are still dying and being injured. Civilians are still dying and being injured in South Sudan. And after the signature of the peace agreement, after the signature of the cessation of hostilities agreement, that really is, it's sad and concerning.
Blackburn says the UK government has started funding the implementation of the peace agreement, including providing technical support to the Independent Boundaries Committee, or IBC. She says the UK is South Sudan's second biggest donor, contributing $200 million annually to humanitarian aid and development sectors such as education and health. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
President Kiir today wrapped up a three-day visit to Egypt, where he talked about bilateral issues with his Egyptian counterpart, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, who gave the South Sudanese president a warm welcome. Winnie Serino has more for VOA from Juba.
Presidential spokesman Atain Wekatain says President Kiir, who traveled to Cairo upon el-Sisi's invitation, says Mr. Kiir briefed the Egyptian president on implementation of the peace agreement, which is running behind schedule. He says President el-Sisi expressed his readiness to support the peace process in South Sudan.
He reaffirmed Egypt's commitment to continue to support peace process in South Sudan, and that South Sudan peace implementation is a must, is not conditional, and Egypt will stand to support South Sudan to ensure that permanent peace prevail in the country.
Tent says Egypt is also promising to support South Sudan's health and education sectors.
So Egypt's role here will not be limited to just only giving physical or no, just only giving monetary support, but also to give moral support to South Sudan, and also to lobby for international community to inject some monies into implementation of peace agreement, because it has a weight that is respected internationally and regionally.
Atain says the Kiir administration hopes Egypt will support South Sudan's agricultural sector in particular. He says the president wants Egypt to train South Sudanese farmers in modern farming methods so that South Sudan no longer has to depend on imported food from Uganda and Kenya. He also says it's important for South Sudan to diversify its economy.
We want to diverse our economy. Instead of relying on oil, we need to develop the agro industry. And then this is where Egypt is also very important, you know, to train South Sudanese to agro industry, like Israel is doing now, to also train South Sudanese. We need to have an alternative to oil. We cannot rely on oil all the time.
Egypt's Foreign Affairs Minister Sameh Shoukry visited Juba in March when he signed a memorandum of understanding with South Sudan Minister in the Office of the President, Mayik Ayi Deng. The two leaders say that MOU would pave the way for greater political and technical cooperation between the two countries. Atain says South Sudan and Egypt have had strong ties ever since South Sudan became an independent country in 2011 and even before that time. In the 1980s, Egypt sponsored a massive infrastructure project called the Jonglei Canal in the Sud wetlands of South Sudan. It was aimed at reducing water loss due to evaporation and transpiration by diverting water from the White Nile and bypassing the swamps. It would have carried water directly to the main channel of the river. This project would have increased Egypt's water supply by 5 to 7%, according to some estimates, but it was halted in the 1984 after attacks by the SPLA. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Uganda and South Sudan have agreed to renew border surveillance at a disputed border post in Uganda's Lamwo district. The decision was reached during a meeting between Ugandan officials and a delegation of South Sudan officials in Lamwo. The officials are seeking a solution to the dispute as they await the demarcation exercise, as we hear from Catherine Nambi in Kampala.
Since 2012, the Pajok Payama Luo ethnic group in South Sudan has claimed that a 14-kilometer stretch of land spanning into Uganda at the Ngomoromo border point belongs to them. The group accuses Uganda government of tampering with coordinates of the Global Positioning System GPS to grab their land. Ugandan authorities insist the contested land belongs to Uganda. This has resulted into border disputes, and armed gangs from South Sudan have repeatedly crossed to the Ugandan side to plunder, destroy property, and sow terror. Delegations from South Sudan and Uganda have met to find a way to resolve the impasse. James Nibson Chidega is the Lamwo resident district commissioner and also is in charge of security in the district.
We are only charting way forward on how we can stay peacefully, properly, and also look at between us who are the trouble causers that is making this country not to have the peace that we want to see. This is why the meeting is here. So I think for our people in South Sudan, for our people in Uganda, they should settle so that we see that the two countries develop well.
Colonel Richard Walekula is from the 5th Infantry Division of the UPDF, which has been deployed to guard the border. He says the border conflicts, if not checked, are likely to strain diplomatic and trade ties between Uganda and South Sudan.
South Sudan and Uganda, we are one. We are the members of the East African community. We share the common goal. We share the common border. Our people coexist. We share the tribes. We share our interests in most cases. The peace and the state of the people is determinant to development of any nation in this world.
South Sudan remains the biggest importer of Uganda's commodities, with close to 15,000 Ugandan traders operating across the border. Tobiolo Alberio is the governor of Tarit State in the Eastern Equatoria in South Sudan. He led the South Sudan delegation to the meeting. He assured he would crack a whip on any errant groups who intend to drag the two sister nations into conflict.
So we will not allow the two countries to be misled by some enemies of peace. We will not allow that one. We will continue to work for peace, because peace is what the whole nation or the whole world is looking for. We will not be able to confuse our forces, government, the community, on the small issues of the border. The border will be there to continue, and the human being will continue to coexist.
In 2016, an African Union team started on the demarcation of the Uganda-South Sudan international border, but its work was halted following renewed tensions between President Salva Kiir and his then-deputy Riek Machar. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
That's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Wife is a Blessing by Isaka Number One.
MC Malumalu.
Number One. Cha 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 cha. Fi haja benu sahili, lakin ma haja sahili ya kwaniye. Bi ainu haja sakit, lakin ma haja sakit ya kwani. Fi haja benu sahili, lakin ma haja sahili ya kwani. Bi ainu haja sahili, lakin ma haja sahili ya kwani. Marane hadi ya min Allah. Wife is a blessing from God Almighty. Kanita mendu mara binadita lo bilong. Kanita jibu mara bijibu leta ilong. That's why I say blessing, blessing. Mara de hadia min rabuna. Blessing. A wife is a blessing from God Almighty. Blessing, blessing. Mara de hadia min Allah. Blessing, blessing. A wife is a blessing from God Almighty. Kelina mafekir gali, mara bes shokol toka sona fashan. Kelina mafekir gali, mara bes shokol tora kabu fibet. Kelita mafekir gali, mara bes shokol to wele du iyal. Kelina mafekir gali, mara bes shokol toka solo gumash. Kelina mafekir gali. Mara bes shokolto wele duketir. Fimara lagara wa indu shihata. Bigeni fimaktab kaman. Fimara laru business.
We've been listening to Isaka Number One with his song, Wife is a Blessing. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a safe and peaceful weekend, everybody. We hope you join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
Blessing. A wife is a blessing from God Almighty. Blessing. Mara de hadia min Allah. Blessing. A wife is a blessing from God Almighty. Kanvi mashakil mata.
fakira shani.